Welcome to the Health Flow Podcast. I'm your host, Jean Armand. Join me weekly as I share health information that will educate and inspire you. Please consider supporting this podcast by listening, subscribing, sharing, and rating. Once again, welcome to the Health Flow Podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Health Flow Podcast. I'm so excited and honored to have Dr. Randy Smith as my guest. Dr. Smith is a surgeon here at a hospital in Atlanta, Georgia, and she's a trauma surgeon. So I'm so excited to have her. Dr. Smith, welcome to the Health Flow Podcast.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the invitation. I'm honored to be here.
Oh, you're amazing. You know, I just look up to you. I just love you. Anyway, so let's get started. I mean, I don't know if you've had any chance to listen to my podcast, and I just wanted to bring the reason behind this is to bring health information and healthcare experience to people so that they can make better decisions about their health. It's just during the time when, you know, patients enter the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's not always the best time to learn, to get all the information that they need. So this is just a platform to educate, my listeners. So
I love it.
Thank you. And this is actually, oh my goodness, it's actually a year now. Probably this podcast is a year. I started last July when I traveled, and I just have a passion for getting information out there to everyone.
Well, congratulations on making it to 1 year.
Thank you. So tell us about your journey of becoming a physician, and not just a physician, a surgeon.
Yes. Well, as far as I can remember, every time someone asked what I wanted to do when I grew up, I would always say that I wanted to be a doctor. And I don't have any doctors in my family. I have a bunch of teachers and educators in the family, and some of them educate in the sciences. And I think that's where I got my passion for just medicine and science in general. But I've always been fascinated with the human body. I played sports, so I was always involved with learning about muscles and movement. And I decided that I wanted to be a doctor. I didn't know what kind of physician I wanted to be,
right?
But I knew that I wanted to be heavily involved in the community. And so during my medical school career, I ended up taking a sabbatical and taking a leave of absence and doing a master's in public health, where I focused a lot on community programs, and I was very interested in health disparities work. And then I came back to medical school, and I had a different lens. My perspective was not only on focusing on the patient in front of me, but also trying to figure out how I can be involved in the community aspects of health. And the first couple of years in medical school, you're in front of a classroom, in front of a professor all the time. You don't really get your hands dirty with hands-on clinical practice. But when I started doing my rotations, I really, really, really loved surgery. Mm-hmm. The hours were long. You had to wake up early in the morning, and none of that bothered me. I just love the fact that you could do something to fix a problem and sometimes literally change someone's complete life course. Like, they can be on the brink of death and you do something, you get them all better, and they walk out of the hospital. And I really love trauma surgery because I felt like it was that connection between medicine and public health that I really loved. And that connection for me was with injury and violence prevention. And so that, fast forward after medical school, I do a surgical residency, I do a fellowship, which is extra training in trauma and critical care. And then now I am working as a full-fledged trauma surgeon, but I also am a professor in public health, and I do a lot of research that kind of brings all of my interests together. So I do a lot of research still on violence prevention and community programs and, you know, trying to alleviate the risk factors that lead to injury, but also the that impede recovery after you have been injured. So that's me in a nutshell.
That's amazing. And I know at one time when we used to work together, we were talking about doing some research with, you know, making it safer for cycling, especially here in Atlanta. I mean, I myself, a cyclist, I only really feel safe going on the trails because it is just on the roads. It's not, you know, there's not enough sidewalks. It's just not a cycling friendly and walking in the city, in the inner city, safe. So that's amazing. I'm glad that you're bringing those two together. So where did you train? Where did you go to medical school? And
So I'm a California girl. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles, and I did my medical school education at the University of California, San Francisco. And I stayed in the Bay Area and did my surgical residency at UCSF. That's the name, UCSF, the East Bay program, which is in Oakland, California. It was very much the community type of training that I was looking for, very trauma heavy, but also working with vulnerable populations. So, I mean, from a surgical perspective, we would see patients like that waited to the very end to come in to get treatment. And we really did see the whole gamut. But I love that patient population. They're vulnerable and they're very appreciative. And I really felt like I was giving back. So I loved every moment of my surgical residency. And then after I finished residency, like I said, I did a trauma surgical critical care fellowship, which is extra training in a specific field. And I did that at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. And then I came to here, Atlanta.
Right. Amazing. That's amazing. That's, and I'm sure it sounds like San Francisco was close to the population that you're currently working in, right?
Correct. Very, very similar population. Yeah. And I like the fact that this is a catchment hospital, meaning that with safety net, we see everyone, we don't turn anyone away, no matter what you look like, what insurance status you have, it doesn't matter. Everyone is treated and treated like with the standard of care. And I love that.
Yeah, me too. I wouldn't work anywhere else at this point in my career other than in a setting like this, because it is very satisfying to know that you can make a difference every day on people who really need it. I mean, not that, I mean, everyone needs healthcare, but we know that disparity exists. And, you know, it's nice to know that we can give back without having to consider, you know, your insurance status and all that. You know, and for you, I mean, when they come in and present, you're not thinking about anything other than getting them better and doing the best that you can. So that's a freedom to practice in, where in other places you may not get that.
Right. I 100% agree. Mm-hmm. Especially now when there's so much talk about disparities and injustice, it's really nice to, you know, my mindset is definitely focused on equity. And when people come in, I'm a trauma surgeon, the way that we manage trauma is a very algorithmic, meaning that we have a system and we follow the same system every time. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I really love about trauma surgery that actually like intrigues my mental like side is the fact that there are no two patients that have the same injuries. Even though we treat them and we work them up the same, we still have to put the pieces of the puzzle together to figure out what's wrong and then quickly do something about it. And that's what I like, is that I'm thinking constantly. It keeps me on my toes, but I also can make a difference. And there's a lot of equity, health equity in trauma care.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like you have no time to consider anything else other than following the same algorithm that you would do for any trauma or for all traumas. And then you have to be detailed enough to mm-hmm. make it specific to that patient.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Young and old, you know, just their health disparities, you know, their pre-existing conditions affect things. I mean, it's just so many. It's trauma is never done. And I do like trauma and I do miss trauma, but you know, there's a time and place for everything.
Right.
There really is. So tell us, we can't miss this right now with the whole Black Lives Matter.
Right.
What are your feelings? I mean, yes, all life matters. I mean,
right.
How do you feel about
that? Yeah. I will tell you, you know, like I mentioned, I wear multiple hats, right? I'm a trauma surgeon, but I also am a public health advocate. And a part of my public health, like training and right now, like my professorship, I look at the numbers a lot. You know, the Black Lives Matter movement, it really started off, or it really gained some traction when we talked about police-related injuries and police brutality. But trauma, it's unfortunate. Those numbers, I mean, the number of police-related traumas is it's a small subset. Yeah. Like, we have a lot of other issues going on. And it's a problem of Black and brown, young Black and brown men. And so I personally believe that Black lives matter, all lives matter, but there is definitely a disparity that we cannot ignore. But it goes beyond the police-related injuries. We really have to look at all injuries that are violent crimes that are happening against our people and try to come up with a strategy for deterring bad behavior and really just promoting peace. It's very unfortunate, some of the high profile cases that have been discussed in the media. I definitely don't condone any of that, of the police related traumas that we've had to endure. But I do think that there's more than just that. Yeah. The numbers are going up as well, especially here in the city where we are. Mm-hmm. We just had our second busiest month in history in the month of June. And I can tell you, I'm feeling the effects of it. The trauma numbers are high, which means that as physicians and care providers, we are running on low fuel because we are just, you know, it's just so much. Right. And I am trying to figure out how to get the word out so that we can come up with programs and yeah. policies that really will alleviate some of the trauma that's going on in our communities. It's just too much.
That's how I feel. Yes, I'm right with you. Black Lives Matters, but we have to stop hurting each other. And that's what I want to get out. The gun violence, just the recklessness on the streets. In our setting, yes, right. We know that there's police brutality exists. We know that racism exists. We've lived through it. We see it. We deal with it. But on a day-to-day basis, we're seeing more of our people hurting themselves, whether it's car wrecks because you're just driving recklessly, or even the gun violence. That's what I want to get out, is that let's stop that. Yes, focus on racism. It's been around for years. We need to continue to grow. I am not trying to belittle that, but I need us to love each other enough to stop hurting each other. We have differences. And it goes we can say it, but we know that it's deeper than that. We know that it's upbringing. We know that it's support. We know that poverty. We know that just the spirit of lack that's in our, in our youth, them not feeling loved and kids. So it's an opportunity really for all of us to get together. This is not a youth problem. This is like a everybody problem. This is not rich and poor. This is all of us coming together, uniting, and say the love for our people, period, is greater than anything else. Let's deal with what's going on, you know, one human being touching another human being life and making a difference. And that I would definitely like to see that change, because we cannot just focus on the brutality in, you know, the police brutality that we're seeing when every single day we see something else.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you were very articulate with your response just then, because I feel the exact same way. And the other thing that I will say is that if we stop having the crime against one another and the violence against one another, then we actually will improve our credibility when we talk about things like police brutality. I think that sometimes it falls on deaf ears because, like I said, it's such a small subset of the total violence that people are like, well, you know, look at what you guys are doing to one another, and they don't really focus on, you know, what we want them to focus on.
Yes.
So I agree. I think that if we start to love on one another a little bit more, then we actually may have more credibility when we talk about the racism and that we're, you know, actually experiencing.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, you know, yes, you're African-American, I'm African-American. There's not that, I mean, yes, more than any other time in my life, I'm seeing more African-American physicians, females. This is an abundance that I've been in this field for a long time. So with that said though, you're still outnumbered. And your counterparts, your coworkers, you know, they have that perspective. It's like, I mean, I've literally heard, you know, other people say, well, if y'all would just stop killing yourselves, that will, you know, there'd be right. some improvement. So, yeah, I just want to get the word out there to our youth and to everyone, not just to youth, because they can't do it by themselves. There's a lot of pressure and expectations that's been placed on them. There's not enough support and leadership and love and direction that's
right.
into the youth. You know, they're not that way. You're not born innately to just be bad. You know, if you're shown things, you're supported, right. you know, you have role models that you look up to. So, you know, that's amazing. What I like is that I remember when you and a few other African-American, especially female surgeons, like, you guys just made me so proud, because I mean, really, because it's a representation that's not always there.
Yeah.
And, it's different when you're speaking to one of your own at times. You know, right. treat everyone with the same love and care and respect, but it's how they receive it, because it's coming from one of their own. Right. It's nice right. to have you guys on the team.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, like you said, there are not many of us. Right. And I am hopeful that in the future, like, future generations will come up and see that they are very well needed in this role. And hopefully the institutions will put an emphasis on recruiting and retaining a more diverse workforce, because it does make a difference. I mean, I've seen it from both sides, both as the clinician, being able to engage with the patient a little bit better than my counterparts, but then also like when family members are in the hospital and then how I, you know, interact on the other side. So I agree with you. There needs to be diversity in the workforce. And when we see it, we hold on to it and, you know, don't let it fall by the wayside.
Exactly. And our diversity is not going to show up in the standard way that, you know, the same people are not going to have the impact, because there's lots of discouragement in when people are growing up that they can't do this. So we need a we need, it's not going to always start from home is what I'm saying for the African American person in there. Like you said, you're the only physician in your family. We see families of doctors, you know, in certain other nationalities. So, you know, we just have to get, we have to just what you're doing, you know, just being available, being seen. Even you doing this podcast, you're a African-American female who's a trauma surgeon. They do exist, and you're not the only one. And we just want to be there as another voice to say, hey, yeah, you can do it. Don't be discouraged. You know, you're, the sky's the limit in what you can do. There's others who've already gone forth and done it. So, you know, in a multiple different people is gonna, we're all gonna have to come together to encourage our youth.
Right.
You know, to show
I them. Have, yeah, I try to participate whenever anyone asks in different pipeline programs. So, you know, high schoolers or even younger kids want to come to the hospital and visit. This is pre-COVID. You know, I would always try to engage with them and show them that, you know, when people ask, I'm like, I'm from South Central Los Angeles. Like, that's where I'm from, South Central LA. And, you know, it really, it just took a lot of people being supportive and telling me that I could do it. When I had test after test and, you know, everybody else was going to hang out and I had to stay home and study. But I just try to, like you said, be visible and be supportive and really participate with pipeline programs. I have a host of mentees all along the spectrum from medical student through resident through fellow. And it's my way of giving back because sometimes you just need to hear some words of encouragement. And when the words of encouragement come from someone who looks like you or maybe has been through a similar situation, I think that it just carries more weight.
Right. Absolutely. You mentioned something, COVID. How has that changed your practice? Has it?
So yes, it has changed our practice because now if you see me, you won't even recognize me in the hospital. I have on so much garb. I literally wear two or even sometimes three masks, you know, my glasses and goggles and face shields and everything else. When COVID first hit, we had no idea what it was going to be like. And the numbers went from nothing to very high, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Personally, it affected me because I have a young baby at home, as you know, and he went and spent some time with his grandparents. And that was my first time away from him just so that he can be protected. Mm-hmm. So that was difficult. And then in the hospital, you know, we are learning something new about COVID very frequently and having to, you know, change our practice, our clinical practice. I would say that traumas were really affected by the COVID movement restrictions. Mm-hmm. We thought initially that our trauma numbers were going to go down, like, oh, everybody's staying at home. Maybe that means that we won't get a lot of traumas, less motor vehicle collisions because less people are driving. Or, you know, less violent injuries because less people are going to the club and drinking. Mm-hmm. But that did not really pan out. The movement restrictions, and right now we're in the process of evaluating all of this, but the movement restrictions from COVID really did not decrease the trauma like we thought. And we started to see more intimate partner violence. Yeah. We, you know, people are now at home and think things are stressful, could be financially stressful, or now having to, you know, try to work and take care of your kids and educate your kids. So that was, we started seeing a lot of intimate partner violence. We also started to see a lot of self-inflicted injuries, people, you know, trying to harm themselves. We also think that may have been related to stress, although we don't know exactly why. And then after the restrictions were lifted, trauma literally, like I said, June was the second busiest month in our history. We have been seeing very, very high volumes of trauma. And there is really, it's hard to determine like what the true cause of these high numbers are, but mm-hmm. we know that it's, you know, we have high COVID numbers, we have high trauma numbers, and they are really like two crises happening at the same time.
Right, exactly. Yeah, one thing I know for sure is that the mask does work. Even if it's a regular surgical mask, I've been in some situations where all I had on was my surgical mask. And, you know, more and more we're seeing people in our area where they absolutely have no symptoms, none whatsoever, and test positive.
Oh, yeah.
So the mask really, really, really worked. And I mean, I guess too, in trauma, because, you know, usually two trauma patients could be in a room. So But if one has COVID, now you've got to isolate them. It's a crisis. You know, it just uses up more beds.
Right.
It's a lot. Yeah.
We have been operating at near or full capacity for quite some time now. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, you know, once someone comes in and they have been deemed COVID positive, it really does take a lot of resources that could be used for someone else or for some other diagnoses. But I do want to also reiterate that wearing a mask is absolutely the right thing to do. Out in public, even if it's going to be for a half a second, you just never know who is walking around without symptoms that can pass it along to you. And also on the flip side, if you have been exposed, you don't want to give it to someone else because you don't know what their immune system is like or how they're going to handle it. And no one wants that guilt of, you know, transmitting it to someone else inadvertently. So wear your mask, please.
Exactly. Wear your mask. Right now we're like self-inflicted quarantine from our parents because they usually visit, you know, all their children in the summertime and they're not visiting anyone because we have young adult children and no one can guarantee that, you know, they won't be in, you just don't know who you're around constantly. And then me in the hospital. So it's just like a standstill. So
it is
affecting us in many, many ways. All right. Okay. So any last minute health advice, safety advice? What do you have to tell the people?
Oh my gosh. I think wear your mask. That's my COVID advice. Wear your mask at all times when you are not with your immediate family, please. Wear your seatbelt if you're going to be in the car. And please, let's just be kind and love one another and minimize all this violence towards one another. You know what I mean? Black Lives Matter. I'm all down for that movement, but we have to do our part as well. We can't just demand, you know, all these things from other people without doing our part as well. So,
yes. Thank you so much. This was amazing. It's a conversation that needs to be had, and hopefully we can talk again in the near future.
Yes, of course. Thank you so much. I'm so honored for the invitation.
And I'm so honored you accepted. So thank you.
All right. Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. Be blessed. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Health Flow Podcast. Your support is much appreciated. It is my goal to share health information that you find helpful. Email topics of interest to thehealthflow@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram at TheHealthFlow, also on Facebook at TheHealthFlow. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and share. Until next time, keep your health flowing.